The Bear in the Attic. The little girl rattled on ceaselessly and seamlessly, the lack of even the slightest pause relieving me of any need to respond or, mercifully, to listen. Mostly, she talked to the teddy bear that sat alongside her in the back seat of the car, strapped in with its own seatbelt. In a moment of mild insanity, or possibly only laxity of alertness, I'd been beguiled into babysitting the little girl while her mother and grandmother went shopping. Her name was Devon. She was a nice little girl, very pretty, and I think quite bright. Perhaps too much so. I felt sorry for her, having a grandmother and mother so irresponsible as to leave her in my care. That's the problem with women these days, no sense of responsibility. Their civility could use a bit of touching up, too, if you ask me. Well, I'd predicted this eventual turn of events. Once they get shoes and escape from the kitchen, I said, they'll take over the world and...
Grandpa, I'm talking to you.
Hmm? Oh, sorry, Devon, I was distracted there for a moment. What is it?
I said Teddy and I really like the pool hall. Can we go there again sometime?
Perhaps, darling, perhaps. But we don't call it a pool hall, do we now? What is it we call it?
The library.
That's right, sweetheart, the library.
I really like that big black man who let me sit up on the counter and mixed me Shirley Temples to drink.
Yes, Ernie's a very nice man. He's the head librarian. Now, why don't you tell your bear a story? I bet he would love to hear you tell him a story. I would, too.
No, I want you to tell us both a story.
Oh, I'd much prefer that you told the story.
Pool hall.
But if you really want me to, I guess I could. What would you like the story to be about?
A bear. Do you know any stories about a bear?
A bear. Why, yes, come to think of it, I do. If you just shut... Be really quiet for a few minutes, dear, while Grandpa concentrates. I'll even show you where the story took place. It had been years since I'd driven out to Birchwood, partly because it made me sad to do so. Many of the fine old homes of the early timber barons had now been turned into apartment houses. The occupants of others had adorned the spacious lawns with an assortment of broken automobiles and discarded appliances, a style of landscape design I like to think of as North Idaho Gothic. A few had simply been abandoned to the whims and guiles of the weather. The majestic birches that gave the neighborhood its name were gone too, cut down because of disease or possibly the need for firewood. Birchwood reminded me of a dog I'd once owned. As a puppy, he was completely white with a brown tip on his tail. When he grew up, the tip vanished, and so we were always explaining to visitors why we'd named him Tippy. The present residents of Birchwood, no doubt, were forever making similar explanations about the name of their neighborhood. Birchwood didn't have a birch in sight. At last we came to the mansion of my Aunt Lucy and Uncle Charles Winslow, which wasn't a mansion, really, but what had seemed like one to me when I was growing up on a tiny stump farm a few miles away. While my family raised essentially the same crop of stumps each year, Uncle Charles and Aunt Lucy wallowed in wealth. Wallow being my mother's word for describing the affluence of her brother and sister-in-law. If some porcine connotation clings to the word, it was perhaps unintended on Mom's part. Indeed, the Winslows were more than generous with our family, the more so after my father died, heaping charity upon us at every opportunity they gave till it hurt. Yet another innocent cruelty with which to afflict the poor. Uncle Charles was an executive, perhaps even the president, for all I know, of a timber company, by far the largest establishment in all of Blight County. I'm not sure whether Blight City ever produced a high society as such, but if so, Uncle Charles and Aunt Lucy surely must have enjoyed a lofty perch in it.
Oh, exclaimed Devon. Is that it? Is that the house? It looks terrible.